Life in rural America can be intoxicating, especially to introverts and urban expats who prefer lazy drives under endless country skies to city congestion. But being far removed from others isn't always a triumph of idle over annoyance. Being so far away from other people can get lonely fast, and once isolation arrives, it's hard to get away from it. So begins the deterioration of mental health among rural people, where suicide rates tend to be high. On this episode of Convo, I speak with Dr. Lisa Curtin. She's a professor in the Department of Psychology at Appalachian State University. She's also on the editorial board of the Journal of Rural Mental Health. We discuss how stigma, isolation, and ironically, social pressures can turn the subtle quiet of solitude into the crushing weight of loneliness. Coming from the city, I grew up in New Jersey, and it's very busy. Very, very busy all the time. You can't turn around without, you know, somebody in your face all the time. You can't go more than 10 consecutive seconds without hearing evidence of people, cars going by or music playing or you know, people talking or something. And then I moved to Northeast Texas. And when I tell you it's different, I mean, it's really, really, really different. It's very quiet. It's very, very rural and very, very open. And you can drive 25 minutes at, 70 miles an hour and see a handful of houses or, you know, there's lots of farms, there's lots of trees and everything. And one thing I've noticed about being out here is, you know, living especially on my own, it's a different kind of edginess, I guess, that I've noticed in myself about things. And I don't want to sound glib when I say this, but I've always been worried about going country crazy since I moved out into the country about 3 years ago, kind of the idea of, you know, when you're out there sort of listening to your own thoughts and there's nobody around really to bounce them off of and there's not much of a social scene and all that kind of stuff, you start thinking about, you know, how much veracity your arguments in life actually hold and there's nobody to disagree with you. And I wonder, is that kind of where some of this stuff starts, where you talk about people in the rural areas getting a little more, just sort of out of touch with life?
I guess let me just kind of back up. I mean, I do think that you're right in terms of broad mental health. We often rely on other people to help monitor us or to maybe notice signs that we're not taking care of ourselves as well, signs that our mood is maybe influencing our behavior or our relationships. And so isolation can kind of add to that if you don't have anyone kind of holding up a mirror for you. But with that being said, let me just kind of step back a bit, that the overall rates of mental illness, kind of diagnosable mental illness, tend to be about the same overall in rural areas compared to urban areas.
Really?
There are a few exceptions to that, and suicide is one of them. You'll see a handful of studies here and there that will find, you know, higher rates of depression in some rural areas, particularly among women. And then some studies suggest higher rates of adolescent substance use. But again, it's kind of some studies, but the overall prevalence rates of diagnosable mental illness tend to be about the same. Suicide is a very clear exception. We see nearly worldwide higher rates of suicide in rural areas than in urban areas.
Well, I have to ask why that is, because I've heard and I've read about the idea that people in the rural areas, a lot of it has to do with, frankly, just access to firearms, is because people who live out in the country, like I said, I live in Northeast Texas, everybody's armed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the access to lethal means is definitely higher in rural areas. You know, there's kind of hunting and recreational uses of firearms. I know that, you know, some of our local farmers have firearms because a coyote could come and kill their cows, and so they have a firearm there for that. There's also oftentimes, not always, but there can be kind of a distrust of the government or somebody outside stepping in and telling people what to do. There's a strong kind of individualistic, self-reliant kind of culture. So there may even be a bit of resistance to control over firearms. But the access is definitely there. It's often for purposes, for other purposes. There's also increased access to pesticides, lethal pesticides. That's another kind of potential means of suicide that tends to be higher in rural areas.
Now, see, being a city guy, you know, born and raised, I that never even occurred to me. But
the pesticides?
Yeah. But that,
yeah.
That's obviously some, that's interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, it's almost exclusively a rural method of suicide. I mean, it falls under, you know, kind of other forms of poisoning or overdose. But, you know, farming pesticides are definitely more of a rural issue.
Wow. And I mean, would they be, I mean, I don't know if you know this specifically, but would they be more or less painful methods of going?
That I have no idea about, honestly.
Because it doesn't sound like it would be a good way to go, to be perfectly honest with you.
But. Sure doesn't. We do see kind of some high rates of suicide among farmers who would then have access to both of those lethal means.
How about that? Well, you know what I find interesting in the academic sense, at least, in terms of the sort of the suicidal idea in rural America, especially out here sort of in the South Midwest area kind of a place. It's very, very religious here, very conservative religious here. And, you know, particularly conservative Christianity is very, very much against suicide.
Yes.
And I never really quite understood how that reconciles. Is there any...
It is an interesting thing, and I don't think that we know a lot about it. You know, so from a kind of conservative Christian perspective, your sense of health and well-being comes directly from God. And so if you're struggling emotionally, that's often kind of conceptualized as a spiritual problem rather than a health or a mental health problem. So there, again, there's not a lot of research to really inform this. I did a small research project with a colleague in the anthropology department, Dr. Sue Keefe, and what we did was we're in the mountains of North Carolina, so kind of in the heart of southern Appalachia, and there is kind of a very strong conservative Christian culture here. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for people who had been diagnosed with depression and were Appalachian natives. And in the context of those interviews, many people kind of talked about that kind of struggle, that their world belief system was that health and well-being came from God. If they were experiencing thoughts, feelings, behaviors that were causing them problems, that they needed to read their Bible more, they needed to pray harder, they needed to speak to their spiritual leaders. Many of them did those things and did not necessarily find that it resolved their issues and that there wasn't maybe as open of a culture to seek more professional mental health services. And that was a struggle for them because they knew that their typical ways of coping kind of weren't working in these situations. The people we talked to all did eventually seek formal mental health services. But what happens a lot of times is that in rural areas, for a variety of reasons, not just kind of the religion, people often wait until things get a little bit more severe to seek help. And that probably has to do also with the lack of availability of mental health services in these areas.
Right. Well, I can tell you pretty much any point at which you find yourself equidistant between any, say, two hospitals up in this northeastern corner of Texas is at least 30, 40 minutes drive to get to a hospital. Matter of fact, I keep getting mailers for a medevac, helicopter insurance, in case, you know, I'm out.
Right.
And it's a real thing here. And it throws me because, you know, the land to me is a bit exotic. It's just so open and there's so much of it. And like I said, being from the East Coast, I'm not used to that.
Exactly.
You know, even though I've been here for, you know, several years now. But it's a very wide open place. And I think what your point, it's a good one that there's not a lot of access necessarily, but there's also a lot of resistance to it. And I think probably that has to do sometimes with, or at least to some degree, with what you said before, this kind of a pioneer, do-it-yourself, self-reliance out here. And, you know, I think that seeking help for something like mental issues is seen as kind of wimpy, for lack of a better way of putting it.
I think it can be, definitely. You know, there's... I know that in our emails, we had talked about a little bit about stigma. And, you know, there's both public stigma and self-stigma. So public stigma would be that I believe that other people will have kind of certain attitudes towards me if I suffer from a mental illness, and that they'll treat me differently because of that. But self-stigma is that I internalize those kinds of attitudes towards myself. And if I've got high degrees of self-stigma, then, you know, that may make me value myself less, may kind of chip away at my self-esteem, and make me, one of the common attitudes is that I should be able to handle this on my own. Hmm. And then you kind of couple that with a culture. I mean, if you're 30 minutes from somebody, you should be self-reliant, and you're going to value that you are self-reliant, you know, and then again, you may be kind of bumping up against something that you can't deal with completely on your own.
Well, and, you know, one of the other aspects of this, I think, is that there is more so here, and it's interesting being an outsider to this place because it really does sort of give you a perspective of how differently, like certain things that I took for granted. Like for, you know, Italian food, for example, is, you know, New Jersey is great. There's not a lot of Italians here, and I wish there were some more of us, you know, down this way. But the problem, I think, sometimes one of the issues that I face down here is that there is a different perspective on sort of making, for lack of a better way of putting it, social faux pas. Where I come from, it's kind of a, if somebody doesn't like you, your attitude is like, well, look, there's one more Christmas present I won't get. Who cares? You know. And whereas people do seem to very much hear sort of, I guess the best way of putting it is they tend to care a lot about what people think. You know, their families want them to go to school for something. They will go to school for that because they don't want to butt up against the family. So I think a lot of times that stigma, what I was trying to talk about, was more of the how people really do react to other people. And a lot of people around, if you said you were going to get help at a psychiatrist, I think a lot of people here, frankly, would just sort of look at you crooked. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's a thing that is a rural thing, or is it a, do you think it's a South thing, or is it an American thing, or?
It's probably all of the above to some extent, maybe accentuated somewhat more in smaller communities. I mean, if you think about kind of what makes a rural area rural, it's basically that the population is less dense and more dispersed. So there's not as many people, as you were saying, to kind of absorb any, you know, if you don't have that one person, well, that may be 10% of your social support network,
right.
As opposed to if you don't have one person, but you're in a more densely populated area, that one person might be 1% of your social support network. So it's not as much of a loss. And in the southeastern United States, there's often what's called a culture of honor, which is kind of a commitment to upholding personal and family reputation. So
right.
that, you know, my reputation is incredibly important. Those kinds of judgments are very important. And it doesn't just impact me, it impacts my family. And you also often in rural areas have kind of multi-generational families that have very deep roots. And it sounds like that's one of the things that you've experienced is you don't have those deep roots there. So you are kind of an outsider.
Right.
And that can be particularly difficult. And a lot of the mental health professionals are outsiders in these areas. So even if we're available for people, we might not be acceptable to people in terms of them seeking help from us.
Right. Now, see, that's something, I'm glad you said that, because there is a little town I live in is called Leonard. And it's a very small town. It's, you know, got a typical small town Texas. So there's a Dairy Queen, you know, there's a there's a Sonic and not much else. There's, you know, a supermarket and whatnot. But it's a very small, very tight community. And the school right down the road from where I live is kind of the hub, the high school for football. And when people talk, by the way, about high school football in Texas being sort of a religion here, it really is. And that's not a judgment. That's just, it's, they are.
It, right. I mean,
it is. You know, people very much like high school football here. But the reason I'm telling you this is because if you go to a game, there is the NFL club, which stands for Not From Leonard.
Huh.
Because, you know, it's fine that you live there, but you're not from there and you're never going to be. And
right.
I do know that I don't necessarily know what my neighbors think of me, but I think they do think I'm a little strange. And I often wonder if I'm that guy that they keep thinking someday they're going to say something along the lines of, oh, he was always so quiet. He never bothered anybody. So I don't know whether that's what they think or not, but I do wonder if I'm on their radar for something like that. But to me, it's not such a problem. It never has been for me to be sort of, I guess, not liked is a way to put it, or to, you know, not feel like I needed to be part of a group. But I have noticed, as you've been saying, that that's around here, that's the kind of a thing. And I wonder how often people do sort of put up with a lot of stuff and it stresses them out a lot because they're afraid of getting shunned. Because once you're shunned out here, there's, like you said, it's so wide open and so thinly populated that if there's a group of people who don't like you and you're not in that group, you've got to go, I don't know where, to find another group. And yeah. I think that can be very traumatic for people.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And then kind of the risk, I don't know if it's as much isolation as I think loneliness is even a larger concern. So like you were saying, you may be somebody who's comfortable being by himself, you know, the not speaking with somebody or not living with somebody may be a good match for you, but that match between kind of the person and the environment, I think, is really important. And I think loneliness, you know, can go along with isolation, obviously. So the lack of social contacts, that's more of a, the loneliness would be more of kind of my subjective experience of the isolation. And for some people, that's more acceptable than for others. But we do know that people who feel more lonely have shorter lifespans, are, you know, kind of less healthy overall, and, you know, report that just their emotional health is less right. good. So, you know, I think that it's kind of that subjective experience that's even more important. And we're seeing more and more loneliness among older individuals in rural areas. So kind of people in kind of like, you know, early adulthood to midlife have busier lives. Their work may bring them in contact with more people on a daily basis, even if they don't have kind of very close intimate relationships. But for older individuals in rural communities, the loneliness may be a huge factor.
Right. And one of the other groups, one of the big social groups around here is church, obviously. Mm-hmm. And people, they know each other through churches. They know the scoop about what's going on in town because they talk in church and their kids go to Bible camps and things like that. It's, you know, very, yep. The area right here where we are is very religiously conservative, and that's a big social aspect of things out
definitely.
Here.
Definitely. I think what you were saying before with schools being a hub of rural communities, so it's schools and faith communities for the most part are kind of the social hubs. And so, yeah, for people who might not be a part of those kinds of groups or might be an outsider coming into those kinds of groups, that can be difficult.
For sure, I can vouch for that. Yeah,
and
it's not that I'm trying to turn this into a therapy session for myself. So I don't mean it like this when I say this, but I do notice that even I, who historically have been the sort of, you know, go to my room and shut the door type and kind of lock the outside world out. I'm the kind of guy who, if I go to say a networking meeting, I need to take like 2 days off to recover from it. You know, so I'm a fairly introverted kind of a guy, generally speaking. But even I have noticed sometimes we had a cold snap here a few weeks ago, where it got genuinely like northeast level cold. It was, you know, 18 or 20 degrees, and overnight it went down to about single digits in some areas around here. And, you know, the car, at the same time, my car was in the shop because the cold got to it, and it, you know, everybody's car dies in the cold weather and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm telling you this is because I was home and I had to do some work from home, but I was home for 3 or 4 days inside in a cold house, and it wasn't even, you know, going outside. And it suddenly made me realize just how far apart from everybody I can be immediately. And it's a little, right. it is a little scary, I have to tell you, sometimes when you sort of look around and realize, if you took my car away, what am I going to do? I mean,
yeah, rural communities, I mean, we rely upon our cars. It's our main form of transportation. And if that's taken, you know, you're fairly helpless. You know, so I think that's a pretty normal reaction to that kind of experience. Almost makes me think about being on a cruise ship where you're suddenly aware when you look out that you are in the middle of nowhere and no one can get to you if anything happens.
Yeah, I somehow feel that way in an airplane, even though it's usually only a couple hours at a time. But I just think there's just so much air up here.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed it. I have to wonder, you know, not to make myself out to be anything I'm not, but I think I tend to be somebody who is more okay with being by himself than a lot of people. And I can't help but think of those people who are more prone to feeling that sense of, say, loneliness or isolation. And are there particular groups other than, you said women, I'm actually interested in why that would be, but women and older people?
Well, for women, there have been a handful of studies that in rural communities have found higher rates of depression and particularly more severe rates of depression, which may relate to kind of the availability of mental health services or accessing those mental health services. Those aren't incredibly reliable findings, but again, that kind of culture of honor may come into play for some rural communities because in addition to kind of upholding personal and family reputation, the culture of honor often adheres to very strong traditional gender role expectations. So men are often seen as providers and defenders. Women are supposed to be more subservient, virtuous, concerned with their family and taking care of their family rather than themselves. And I think that some of that for some people could be a factor for women in particular. We do see some high rates of domestic violence that may go along with some of those kinds of more traditional gender roles. And certainly any form of trauma is going to increase the likelihood of mental health problems.
You yourself obviously are in a rural area, and I'm sure you have to sort of contend with this kind of idea all the time. How do you get through to people? How do you get to these isolated, lonely people or people who really, really do need some kind of emotional help? It might not really be, one, they might not think it's a good idea to do it, or two, they just don't think about it because it was just never brought up in the conversation.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing, without a doubt. I'm an outsider to this area as well. So I was originally born in Brooklyn, but mainly raised in Florida and moved here. And even though I've been here for over 20 years, my children have been raised here. I think we'll always be kind of considered outsiders. Mm. And I think if you kind of humbly own that stance and kind of there's nothing I'm going to be able to do about that. But what I might be able to do is if I do have the opportunity to speak with someone, I can represent outsiders and psychologists in particular in a way that might defy some of the stereotypes that people might have about me. So one stereotype that people will often have about psychologists is that psychologists have a reputation as not accepting spiritual beliefs or kind of being anti-religious in some ways. And whether that's a warranted stereotype or not, I'm not 100% sure. but one of the things that I'll often talk to my clients about is that, you know, I would like for you to use all the tools that you have at your disposal to cope. And I'm not at all interested in taking, you know, prayer away from you if that's something that has been helpful to you. What you're telling me is that maybe that hasn't been enough for this depression. So I may have some other things that we can kind of add to your toolbox. So I think if you kind of have the stance that I'm not trying to change who you are, I'm not trying to change your value system, I'm not trying to challenge that in any way, but we can kind of talk about that and work with it and maybe add to it. I think that can be kind of a helpful stance. I think also just kind of recognizing, at least in the Appalachian region, the culture really values personal relationships, and the professional stance of a psychologist is that I'm the professional, you're a client. We don't have kind of a reciprocal friendship in any way, that it's going to be important that we're here to kind of work on what brings you here. But I'll have clients from this culture who really just want to take 2 minutes at the beginning to just say, hey, Lisa, how are you? You know, they care about me, and it's important to them that they get to ask me those things, or if they've baked a friendship cake that weekend and they bring it to me, that I don't reject that because ethically I shouldn't be taking gifts. That may be an important piece of their culture for them to feel like we have kind of a personal relationship, even though it is clearly a professional one.
Well, you talk about sort of the value of, not trying to change the system as you are. And that's something that I learned very quickly, and probably not quickly enough, unfortunately.
Of us take a little more time than we need.
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, I do think that a lot of people here think I'm probably very pushy and or aggressive sometimes or assertive because—
Well, you are from Jersey.
Right. And the reason I actually moved to Texas was because I came to teach a writing class a few years ago. And I got to the point where at the beginning of every class, I would, the first day of every class I was teaching, I would say, you have to know something. I'm not yelling at you. I'm from New Jersey. and people would kind of look at me crooked. And then they realize it's like, it's always going to sound like everything I say sounds very blunt. It sounds very definitive. It sounds like I'm sort of going, yeah, this. And maybe I drive a little too fast or whatever. And I swear a little more often than I probably should. And it's those are the kind of things that are just not in the culture here. And I realized that when a Texan starts talking the way I talk normally, they're actually upset. So this is why people think I'm always upset, around these parts. But I did try very hard to not change the culture or make it look like I was, because I thought, well, see, Texas didn't come and wrangle me in the middle of the night and make me move to it.
Right.
I chose to be here. So in that sense, it's their culture and I'm putting myself into it. But at the same time, being an outsider, it feels very alien. I often think of the show Third Rock from the Sun, where you had these, this family of aliens who was trying very hard to fit in and be normal and kind of got it academically, but didn't get it, spiritually or socially.
Right.
I wonder, have you found a lot of sort of, it's a long-winded way of asking this question, but have you found that kind of thing is common in, say, northeastern expats or city expats into the country? Because everybody thinks, let's move out of the country. It's going to be beautiful and bucolic and, all that. And then they get here and realize that it's a very different kind of way of living.
Right, right. It's not just kind of all peace and quiet and kumbaya. Yeah. I think that's a fairly common kind of experience. And I guess it's probably an experience that you would have coming in the opposite direction as well. So somebody who moves from where I live to New York City, would be very different. And again, you might make that move because New York City has some things that you're interested in, but maybe it's not the whole package, and that kind of adaptation and willingness to kind of feel things out or ask questions if you don't understand something, kind of adjust your behavior where you feel like you need to, or not adjust your behavior and recognize that there could be consequences for it, or you might be called out on it, or you might be, looked at as weird. I think that some people in this area probably look at me as though I'm weird, and I think I'm okay with pieces of that.
Right. Yeah, I don't mind being viewed as weird as long as they don't think I'm dangerous or legitimately a guy that they have to say, hey, you was always so quiet, So
keep your eye on that guy.
Yeah. So let me ask this. What are really the sort of the dangers? I mean, what is the progression of, say, mental health deterioration especially in a place where it's much more spread out and isolated, like a rural area? Does it have a predictable progression of it starts with, say, not going to church for a while, and then it just devolves into all is lost? Or am I oversimplifying?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really hard question to answer. And I think my initial response is that it's much more complicated than that, as you were kind of implying. That the path from point A to point Z is very individualized, very heterogeneous as opposed to homogeneous. A few thoughts are that, we do have, so if somebody is experiencing some maybe mental health symptoms, they're feeling kind of more depressed or down, there may be some very good reasons for that. So maybe in rural areas, a significant loss might be felt even more acutely because of the lack of other social support, or if there's an economic turndown, that could be, you know, kind of a trigger for symptoms of depression or feelings of depression. But then you've got lack of available mental health services, like we were talking about, or even if they are available, they may not be easily accessible. So, you know, traveling from point A to point B may be very difficult. Your car could be in the shop, as you were talking about, so you can't access services even if they are available. And then there's kind of the acceptability of those services. Will those professionals be competent culturally to understand me? I may have concerns about stigma. I may have concerns about just confidentiality. So if there's one mental health clinic in the area where you live, and I see your car parked in front of there, and there's nothing else there, I know that you're there.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
Often point that out. You know, there's a saying that, you know, in rural areas, if I forgot what I did yesterday, somebody else remembers. So yeah. It's really hard to kind of find that sense of privacy in some ways, even though there may be fewer people. So I think, you know, all of those factors can make things a little bit less accessible or acceptable. And then you've got, you know, things like multiple relationships. So maybe I go to church and my kid goes to school with the only mental health professional in town. Well, I don't want to go see her.
Now, you're saying it like you see the car in the parking lot. I can tell you who drives every car and every truck in my neighborhood.
Yep.
Even though I don't talk to them, I know exactly whose car it is all the time. So
yeah, so if you see their car parked someplace, you know, in front of a car place, then you know that they've had car trouble.
Yeah.
And you kind of note that. Well, if they've had car trouble, that doesn't have the same type of potential judgments that people might make about somebody who's seeking mental health services. So somebody could be in there because their kid bit somebody at daycare. And they're looking for some help, but somebody else might make the judgment that, oh, they might be dangerous.
Hmm.
Because that's one of the most commonly, you know, it's not supported, but it is kind of a common stereotype of individuals with mental health problems is that they could be dangerous.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that sometimes too. And it's, I think, you know, with people I've known who've been in need of some mental help, genuinely in need of mental help. That's one of the things I hear no matter where. It's not just a rural thing, but I mm-hmm. hear it a lot of places where somebody thinks, oh, that person is dangerous. That person, waiting for them to snap is kind of a thing, you know, and which always just seems to be, to me, so uncompassionate and so small-minded, you know, because it just, well, if you think the person is hurting that badly, you know,
right.
wouldn't it be better to maybe, you know, talk to them as opposed to think, oh, wow, this guy's going
to
pull
as opposed to further isolating them or avoiding
right.
them. Yeah,
right.
Definitely. And I mean, people who have diagnosable mental health problems are more likely to be victims than to perpetrate any kind of violence against
right.
anybody else. But we don't hear those stories.
Right.
You know, so some of those kinds of stigmatizing attitudes, you can understand why people might avoid seeking help when things are more manageable. And so if people often put it off until it reaches more of a crisis. And that may be one of the reasons, I mean, one of potentially many reasons that we could see higher rates of suicide in rural areas, because when they do seek help, it's more severe.
Hmm. Well, what about in terms of the doctors themselves? As I know the availability of access is not necessarily all that great in most rural areas, but why... and this might be a stupid question that has an obvious answer, but sometimes you got to ask stupid questions
yeah,
with obvious
no, I
answers.
Yeah, no, I don't think there are stupid questions usually.
But why is it that so few doctors, mental health or otherwise, seem to want to set up shop in rural America? Because there are plenty of people out here in admittedly a wide area, but trying to find, you know, a dentist even is hard. So imagine finding a psychiatrist out here. But why don't the professionals seem to want to set up closer to the more rural areas? You think they would have at least a captive audience of people that they could
Yeah, I think that's a complicated question. So I know that there was a project that was done with psychologists in particular, looking at would psychologists be interested in, you know, working in rural areas. And actually, they found that a lot of psychologists would be interested.
Really?
It's hard sometimes to find positions. Sometimes you have to go in and create a position, or they don't advertise many of those positions, maybe nationwide. So a lot of kind of local agencies will only advertise locally. And if there are no providers, no one's going to be applying for those positions. So I think that one is kind of, you know, we may have the assumption that nobody wants to come to these areas, but sometimes people really do want to come to these areas, you know, especially people who like outdoor activities, you know, who, you know, may want to be in more of a rural area. You know, those may be attractive, but it's hard to find some of those positions. And I think advertising is one of the potential problems. I think another problem is that the providers are often fairly isolated. So, you know, if you're the only psychologist in town, that can be a very hard situation because, you know, you're working with people, you can't talk about your job. And you think of how often we go, you know, out to dinner or even, you know, talk on the phone with somebody and we're talking about what our day was like. Well, a psychologist can't really talk about that very much.
Right.
So that can be very isolating. And then you don't have people to consult with if you've got maybe kind of some, you know, tricky cases, you know, something that you'd like to kind of run by a colleague. You don't have those kinds of colleagues. So, you know, we need to do a better job of kind of supporting the providers and making those kinds of positions just kind of a little bit more attractive. So maybe if you bring in a psychologist to a town, as just one example, that part of their payment package is going to conferences so that they can keep up with, you know, continuing education and they can kind of connect with their broader professional community and get that kind of support for themselves.
Not to mention the idea that with a provider himself or herself being set up and being isolated just professionally, there's also socially. I mean, these people are going to live in the same town and you're going to see the guy at the restaurant and you're not going to want to talk to him because, you know, talking, even if you don't go to him, just talking to him, everybody knows he's the, you know, he's the shrink. So.
Right. And oftentimes, you know, when you're in any area, you need to talk with clients about confidentiality. But in rural areas, that's often kind of discussed very explicitly. How do we want to handle it? Because it's going to be when we run into each other. It's not going to be if we run into each other.
Right.
And so you really want to kind of know what the client's preference is. Do you want to, should I wait to see if you say hi to me first and you're not going to be offended if I don't acknowledge you? Or do we pretend we don't know each other, but that would probably be unlikely in some of these very small communities. So you often have to spend a little bit of time kind of working out what the client's comfortable with.
A very complicated set of issues. Dr. Garten, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Sure. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. I appreciate you putting shining some light on this subject.
Convoy is a production of KTR FM in Commerce, Texas. Production and logo design by Scott Morgan. Music by Eric the Ninja. Additional episodes of Convoy are available at ktr.org. You can support this program and others like it by visiting ktr.org and clicking donate.